Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off.
The Dateable podcast is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host and producer, Julie Krafchik, as we explore this crazy dateable world.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dateable, a show all about modern dating where we are your investigative reporters because we are here to investigate why people do the things that they do and say the shit that they say when it comes to modern dating.
I like that one.
Meet your lovely investigative reporter, co-reporter here, Julie Krafchik.
I like that title. I'm going to stick with that one from now on. That's a good one.
It makes us sound very scientific. Right.
It does. And I feel even more scientific because you and I have been really busy recording the last couple of days. We've been really pulling it up to top into high gear again. And we are ready for season 13, which will be next week. I can't even believe we're on season 13.
It just never stops. 13. I had a friend ask me the other day. She was like, you've been doing the podcast for a while. What season are you on now? Like 4 or 5? I'm like, no.
13. Yes. And we're not going to give too much away, but we have a really amazing premiere episode for this season. And I will say the guest is scientific and it does have to do with sex because we are a sex podcast, obviously.
Yes. Apparently, that's our rebrand, the Sexable podcast. This will be our last bonus episode for season 12 before we get into season 13. And the treat for you all this week is Julie was on a podcast to speak. Basically, yes. I felt like it was kind of a panel.
Yeah, I mean, it was with the California Groundbreakers podcast. They reached out, the host Vanessa, and she also had, speaking of scientific, I feel like this elevates me by default that I was on there with a professor in the attraction lab at UC Davis, who also hint, hint, we are going to have as a guest on our podcast because it was so fun talking with him. And you'll all hear on the episode, he has a lot of really interesting insights that is just a different lens of all this. Like he studies this very scientifically.
One thing that was very much noteworthy about this entire experience is that Julie, you can fully grasp your title as a Bay Area expert now, because you, first of all, I think you have been in the Bay Area for 10 years now. Has it been 10 years?
Yeah. Over 10 years. I officially am a local. I don't know if locals would agree with that, but I'm going to go with that statement. I think it's like 10 years or more you become a local.
You're
right?
Not born and raised, but you're definitely more in tune with the Bay Area scene than most people, especially earning this badge of, you know, 10 plus years in the area. And not only are you that, you are also an expert in Bay Area dating too. So see, you just got two new titles underneath your investigative reporter belt.
I love it. But of course, as most guest appearances that UA and I are on, they always have to do with COVID dating. I feel like this has definitely been our year to be guests because it's like a whole new realm of dating that is uncharted territory, basically. And I think it's interesting because this episode, a lot of it is, you know, what's going to happen? Are we in this hot vac summer? And, you know, I think we were, we still are, but there's a little bit of a twist that came with Delta for sure. And we dive into it. We won't go too deep, but just like about like what's going to happen after it. Like, are people going to be in roaring 20s mode, or are we in FODA, fear of dating again?
And if we are in roaring 20s mode, how long does that last for before we go into another lockdown, which is my prediction, at least for LA? I think we're going to go into another lockdown. Two people close to me had breakthrough COVID positive tests, which means they were vaxxed and tested positive for COVID. And both of them are very sick.
Oh, shit.
So this is troubling to me. Yes. And I think it's going to hinder the dating scene. I think this hot girl summer, hot vax summer, FODA is real because COVID is real still.
I feel like we always love to, you know, take the polls out to our people and see, get a pulse of what everyone's feeling. So we ran two respective polls today. We had one that was on Instagram and one that was in the Facebook group. So it was really just trying to get a feel of like who is experiencing FODA and who is like, I am ready to date again. I have zero FODA.
And you want me to give the results of the Instagram poll first?
Yeah. Yep, let's do that.
We have 75%, can you guess, yes or no? Fear of FODA, yes or no? Can you guess, Julie?
Well, it's bad because I already saw. But
oh, you already saw? Yeah. She cheated. Well, 75% of you said, yes, I definitely have a fear of FODA. And 25% of you said no. Or maybe you didn't know what FODA was. But it is overwhelmingly the majority who definitely still have a fear of dating again.
You know what's interesting? In our Facebook group poll, I feel like the results were a little more, I mean, it was definitely skewing more to FODA, but more close to 50-50. It was not as 75-25. And I thought what was interesting there is we got the reasons why people were feeling that way. And I think the bulk of the reasons actually was that people felt frustrated by online dating apps. Mm. And they felt like this was the only method this day and age. And it's actually on this episode, I'm not going to go into too much because Paul talks all about it too, is that in the past, it's always been a balance of meeting IRL too, but now we're just like relying on one. So maybe the interactions feel a little more harsh because there's not other interactions to balance it out. I thought that was interesting that a lot of people said that. There were definitely some trickling results for COVID, just fear of COVID again. Not as many, though, as others. So that's kind of an interesting aspect. I thought that might be a piece of it. A few other trickling responses of just like social skills, but not as many, like lack of social skills, not working that muscle. Not as many as I would have thought either. And then a couple comments around like body image, which I thought was interesting, just because I mean, I've definitely felt this sometimes, you know, during you got your pandemic bod, right? The COVID-15 is a thing. So sometimes when that's happening, you don't feel as confident in dating. So it's interesting to hear some of the reasons that people were citing. And I'm sure there's even more, but the whole like dating apps as a continued frustration seems to be something that really is holding people back.
So it sounds like it's the same as pre-COVID. The only thing different on that list is COVID. Everything else stays the same. So we're just back to where we were before. But I kind of feel the frustration of this because before COVID, people can be frustrated with dating apps, but still know that there are other opportunities and other avenues to meet people. Even if they don't take advantage of those avenues, they know those are available. But now all of those options are taken away. They're like, fuck, I can only blame dating apps.
Oh my God, I totally feel that. I bet you have too. Like this like mythological feeling that you are going to meet someone in a bar. I can count on my hands like how many times that's resulted in a real relationship. Spoiler alert, I don't need two hands. Yeah. I just feel like though there's that feeling of thinking that it's a possibility though that gives you hope.
Yes. And then you think about your meet cute story of like walking into a coffee shop or walking down the street and bumping into someone. And then you go home and you go on the dating apps and you're like, this does not mimic the fantasy that I have created in my head. It's the same, y'all, before and during and after COVID. I hate to burst your bubble. It's the same either way. But mindset is so huge in all of this. And we totally feel you. If you have FODA, you are obviously not alone. But also we totally totally get it. We've all been there. And now it's even more amplified because even thinking about going on that first date, where do you go? How do you date? What questions do you ask? Now it's like just asking if someone's vaxxed is not even enough. It's like, have you had a recent negative COVID test? Probably plays into it. But my prediction is maybe all those dating events, those singles events may make a comeback if they make people take a same day PCR test, show as your negative test result, and then that night you can join this event. So it's more of a safe space.
That is so much fucking work though. I feel like for singles, I don't know. It does make me a little sad when I see all the downer messages about dating apps. Maybe because I met my current partner on a dating app. I've also met a partner before that on a dating app. And I feel like it's always, you know, the quick to blame. And like, I've definitely been there myself where I felt very frustrated by it. I'm not going to say too much, but UA and I have been kind of like working on something behind the scenes too that hopefully will help people out a lot with this, because I feel like it's such, you know, like I was just thinking about this day. I'm like, I'm so happy right this minute, like with my partner. And I have Hinge to thank because I would never have met him ever, you know? So yeah, I'm not saying that to like brag in any way, but I'm saying it because I feel like all our members that are on dating apps, they're all on them. So you know good people are on there. It's just learning the skill set to be able to find those good people, because I personally really believe strongly they exist.
There's something really problematic going on, and I think it has to do with stigma, is that often we hear people talk about dating apps and specifically call one or two out as the bad ones they've had experience with. But when people have met people on dating apps, they don't say, oh, I met this person on Hinge, what a lovely app. They say, oh, we met online. So I think the dating apps are getting shunned in a way because we are not celebrating the matches that we have had on these dating apps, and we're not calling out the apps specifically. So maybe this is a challenge for our listeners, is that if you have had good luck in the past on apps, even if those relationships didn't work out, at least give the apps a shout out. So we're putting that into the universe instead of all this like, I hate Hinge, I hate Bumble, I hate Coffee Meets Bagel. What about like, I met a partner who I was with for 3 months on from Hinge, and it was a lovely time.
Right. I don't know. I feel like I would gladly be the spokesperson for Hinge.
Is that a
hint to Hinge that Dateable podcast will sponsor? Yes. But I think it's human nature in a way, because it feels weird. Like even when I was saying it, I'm like, I don't want to like brag. It's not bragging, but you feel kind of weird being like, yeah, I'm happy. Like that's like a weird thing to say. It's easier to talk about the shit that's going on in a way.
Well, I mean, people brag about, oh, I met my partner jogging and it was a really cute story. He ran into me and I was tying my shoe. But why can't we openly be like, oh, we met on Hinge, he had this really great line, his profile photo was this, and I said this to him. Like that could be part of a story too that we can talk about.
Totally.
But that is very much related to our question. Because speaking of online dating, I'm sure a lot of you are thinking about IRL dating and meeting people in real life. So the question we've been getting lately is, how can I increase my chances of being approached IRL?
Yes, I love this. I mean, I think first and foremost, I do this out of nervous energy, is just be on my phone, or not, maybe not even nervous energy, but this feeling like I need to be preoccupied at all times.
Yeah.
And I think if you are staring at your phone, no one is going to come up to you. No one. Nope. So I think that's probably like step one. I think also big groups, like anything times that you're with like more than one or two people max, it's very, very intimidating for someone to come up to you. So I think some of approachability is, you know, like setting yourself up that you look like someone that wants to be talked to, whether that's like freeing yourself from distractions, but also not making the barrier so huge that someone has to fight their way through.
Yeah. Think about the other person. The other person's biggest fear is rejection. They don't want to be rejected. So when they see you, they're looking for all the signs to lessen their chances of rejection. So one way people can do that is the approachability. If you, we've heard this before, if you wear something that is a conversation starter, whether it's like your alma mater sweatshirt, whether it's a specific sports team or a specific brand that you love, it garners attention and it inspires people to come and talk to you and be like, hey, I went to the rivalry school and I can't believe we're in the same city, you know? So that's part of the approachability. The other part of approachability is mindset. I think a lot of times we go out there with the mindset of, I hope someone approaches me today. Mm-hmm. Well, that puts a lot of onus on the other person. What if you change your mindset to, I welcome other people into my space today? That creates a much friendlier, approachable mindset, and your energy will attract a similar type of energy. So instead of being like me versus you, you better approach me. It's like, I welcome you into my sphere.
I love that. I think I'm going to give a shout out to one of our moderators, Caitlin, who I think does a really great job with this. And I think one of the things she's said, because people have asked her in the group, is that she, you know, positions herself, like if she goes to a brewery, or basically part of positioning yourself is finding locations that are going to be filled with the types of people you want to be meeting. So that's step one. And then she'll find that, like, let's say she's in a brewery, she'll find the area that's near, you know, hot guys, because that's, she's straight and that's who she's attracted to. And I think that positioning, you're kind of like allowing, like what you just said, Yue, is like meeting that person halfway. Like, how can you be like totally in an area that someone has no line of sight to you and just hope that they get like this, you know, radio signal to come over and find you?
Yes, perfect. Being approachable in real life just means you have to make yourself approachable. And so hopefully those are some pointers you can take onto your next solo date or master date or just walking around your neighborhood.
I think the other piece is that we're always in our head that like people, you know, that we're hoping they approach us. But why not approach them? If everyone else is hoping they're getting approached too, then that kind of is what ends up happening, is no one's approaching anyone. I mean, it's, I feel like there's no harm in just like making some small talk to someone. I know it's easier said than done. It's not something I'm good at all. So I'm not like saying that, you know, it's the easiest thing to do. But I think sometimes people get in their head with it that someone doesn't want to talk to them. But at the same time, that's why they're out and about hoping that someone talks to them.
Yeah. Stop putting the onus on other people. And what can you do in this moment in time to get what you're looking for, right? So taking control of all that. So hopefully that could be a question for a future episode. How do you approach people in real life? Look for that coming soon on the Dateable podcast. Let's get into some announcements for this week. In addition to our new season starting, we are also rolling out our new version of the sounding board. So we've been talking about this quite a bit. Sounding board is the next level of Dateable. If you want to connect with, think about it as like taking our relationship to the next level. Dateable is kind of like you're just talking to each other, which is great. But sounding board is like we're in some sort of like a thing, a situationship, right? And
and it's, hey, not, it's just a committed relationship.
It's committed. Yeah. So, okay, fine. It's a relationship. It's official. And you, not only are you in a relationship with Julie and I, you're in a relationship with all the other people that are part of the community. So we've been iterating on what the sounding board should be like, and it's been such a wonderful experience. And we know that for this next iteration, we want a little bit more intimacy and a little bit more time with all of you. So the new version of the sounding board is that there's only one level, which makes it much easier. And this level includes podcast discussions, because we realize after you listen to an episode, there's a lot to talk about. And maybe there are other people in your life who don't listen to Dateable and you don't know, you can't talk to them about the episode. So why not be part of a group of people who listen to the same episode as you and they want to talk about it? The other part of the sounding board that we're really excited about are what we're calling office hours with Julie and I, where you get a chance to chat with us about anything. And this is on a monthly basis, where you get this designated time with the two of us, and it is a free open forum for you. Anything you want to talk about. And you can also, what I love about it is that you can learn from other people what they're going through. And one, realize you're not in this alone. And two, learn from other people's challenges or experiences.
It's kind of like a mastermind group that you'll have the opportunity in the office hours. We're kind of transforming these from coffee chats, and we'll have the opportunity to like get specific on things that are happening on your dating life and get UA and I's feedback in addition to anyone else that's in that room at that time. And then in addition to that, you'll be getting these discussions like UA alluded to. And some of that might be recapping a past podcast, but some of it also is we're kind of going to have, I hate using the word curriculum, but it's almost like a, you know, a list of more curated topics. Like, for example, one could be approaching in real life. Like, what is the, like, allowing people to have this open conversation where we kind of get ideas from each other. I think obviously the podcast is great, but we're just talking out to you all where this allows you to kind of, you know, be talking to each other. And someone might have been even listening to what UA and I just said and was like, oh, that sparked this idea and this idea. And I think having the ability to do that in a discussion is going to be really great. And the topics like are going to range from all sorts of things to kind of these tactical topics all the way to like, do I want children? How do I communicate to that to a partner? Like these deeper questions like that we're going to go, you know, much deeper, and it's going to be great. I'm very excited. Our hosts are going to be leading a lot of these. It's going to be just, I'm very excited for this next evolution of the Sounding Board.
So find out all about it at datablepodcast.com/soundingboard. We're going to be rolling out a lot of content about the Sounding Board on our social channels, as well as in the Facebook community, which is called Love in the Time of Corona by the Dateable Podcast. Thanks all to all of our new members who've joined recently. A whole influx. I think it's because of the Delta variant. It's like, boom, we're back at it. Everyone's out searching for love in the time of Corona again. Thanks to all the new members joining us. But look for all of that content. We'll be rolling that out. In the meantime, feel free to DM us on Instagram because we are pretty active there.
Yep. And definitely follow us at Dateable Podcast. Awesome. Let's get into our sponsors.
This episode is made possible by Lugs. Amidst the golden age of the 90s, Lugs found its footing as a leader within the footwear and fashion space. Priding itself on quality materials and supreme comfort, the brand never wavered with the passing of trends. Whether you remember the brand's early appeal within the hip-hop culture or the countless celebrity endorsements, one thing remains the same: Lugs' distinctive style. Julie and I both have a few different styles of Lugs shoes, ranging from their iconic boots to their canvas sneakers. Even though they're so different in style, one thing remains the same. They're all so comfortable and light. I love my flirt high zip boots that I can wear with cute summer dresses, and my canvas sneakers go so perfectly with my jeans and t-shirts. Fun, comfortable, everyday wear, realistically priced and affordable. So go treat yourself. You can never have too many pairs of Lugs. Exclusively for our beautiful listeners, get 30% off full price items now by going to lugs.com and entering the code DATEABLE. Again, that's lugz.com and entering the code DATEABLE for 30% off full price items. This episode is brought to you by the book Open Your Heart by Cherise Hodges. Here's a quick summary of the book. Their family's historic bed and breakfast in Charleston, South Carolina is a legacy the four very different Richardson sisters are determined to protect at all costs. But sudden passion is a seductive and dangerous complication. That's right. Here's a little more about the plot. For fashion boutique owner Yolanda Richardson, coming home is a matter of life and death. Witness to a brutal crime, she's terrified to put her family's B&B in the crosshairs after she starts receiving death threats. Her only refuge is the protection of her reserved hired bodyguard, Charles Morris. But Charles is anything but safe. His icy, cool, under fire, and hidden intensity is too explosive for Yolanda to resist. Find out if Yolanda is able to keep her distance by reading the book Open Your Heart by Cherise Hodges. You can find it wherever books are sold or by going to kensingtonbooks.com.
Okay, so let's get into the episode with Vanessa. Vanessa Richardson, myself, and Paul.
Woohoo!
Welcome to California Groundbreakers, which focuses on the place that starts trends, starts movements, and shakes up how things are done nationwide and around the world. We're inviting interesting people doing innovative things to sit down and talk with us about how they're asking and answering the big questions facing all Californians. Our goal is to inspire change across the state, one conversation at a time. We've created a podcast series called This Changes Everything, which focuses on what California will look like in the post-pandemic future. We're talking with California Groundbreakers about how they see the Golden State changing for the better or for the worse, or still to be determined, as we move out of shutdown. We want to give thanks to our donors like John and Francis Taws, who funded the production of this episode. If you like what you hear, please help us continue by making a podcast creation donation. Click on the Support Us link on our SoundCloud podcast page or on the Donate tab of our website, californiagroundbreakers.org. Long ago, in the before times, a first date often involved dinner and a movie, a few drinks in a crowded bar, and if things went well, a goodnight kiss. Cut to the year 2020, in which the coronavirus changed all of that with social distancing, mask wearing, and the threat of catching a deadly disease. But right now, when every adult is eligible for vaccination and able to do more of their regular again, dating has come back in force. The hottest pickup line right now may be, "Hey, I'm vaccinated." But romance may never go back to what it once was. For some people, the coronavirus brought on stressors and fears too heavy to shake off overnight. Other single people said the pandemic's long periods of isolation have inspired awakenings and shifted their priorities, for better or worse. What does the future hold for modern dating, romance, and relationships? Join us as we talk with two people who focus on getting the answers to those questions. Paul Eastwick is a professor of psychology at UC Davis and is the head of the university's Attraction and Relationship Research Lab. Julie Krafchik is producer and co-host of the podcast Dateable, which focuses on sex, love, dating and relationships, and how people go about getting them. They will tell us what to expect when it comes to virtual and face-to-face dating, how to keep current relationships going, and whether it's really shaping up to be a hot vax summer.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vanessa Richardson. I'm Executive Director of California Groundbreakers, and thank you for tuning in today. So we're recording this episode just before Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial kickoff to summer. And this year, it seems like it's the start of Shock Girl Summer or Hot Vax Summer. For those of you who have never heard those terms, I just heard them a couple of days ago. They're a play on Hot Girl Summer. That's the title of a hit song from Megan Thee Stallion in the summer of 2019, which seems like forever ago. But now as we enter the summer of 2021, about half of eligible Americans are on the verge of full vaccination, and we're coming out of our homes to do more of the things that we used to do pre-pandemic. And that includes two things that historically have caused us both incredible joy and maybe also incredible frustration, fear, loathing, dread. And that is finding and maintaining a good relationship. So for some people, the prospect of dating like normal is exciting. For others, it can be like FODA, or fear of dating again, because post-pandemic dating could be a total question mark and a leap into the great unknown. And for those who are in relationships that happened before the pandemic or started during the pandemic, the future may also be an unknown, since the coronavirus has caused all of us so many stressors, personally and professionally, which can take a toll on romance, passion, and affection for the person that you may have been holed up with in the same house for the past 14 plus months. So I brought together two people who look in depth at the topics of dating and relationships on a regular basis, and probably get asked a lot of questions about those topics on a regular basis, maybe even more so these days than ever before. I'm going to ask them some questions, my own, and a few that I've gathered from some interested parties, about relationships, romance, and how to manage both of those as we step out of the pandemic. So first, I'd like to introduce Paul Eastwick. He is professor of psychology at the University of California at Davis. And Paul teaches graduate and undergrad courses on close relationships and evolutionary psychology. And he also runs the Attraction and Relationship Research Laboratory at UC Davis, which sounds like a very cool place to do research.
Yes, it is.
And so thanks, Paul, for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
And also we have Julie Krafchik. She is co-host and producer of Dateable, one of the top podcasts about love, sex, and dating, with a focus on the modern culture of dating and why people date the way they do. And last year, Julie started the online communities Love in the Time of Corona, love that title, and also The Sounding Board, to let Dateable listeners discuss all the changes happening in the dating landscape due to the pandemic. Julie lives in San Francisco, and her other job is as an app designer and researcher who focuses on using technology to foster human connection. So Julie, welcome to you as well. So this is a very exciting conversation. I'll tell you, I'm not dating. I'm not in a relationship. I'm just kind of like on the fence right now. So it's not FOMO, but it's also not YOLO. But I'd love to hear what answers you have to the questions that I have and others. So I'm going to start with kind of an overview question about maybe what you have heard or seen or viewed in the past year about what people are thinking, doing, feeling about having or seeking a relationship during the pandemic. I know, Paul, you didn't ask me anything on Reddit a few months ago, so I saw some interesting questions that you were asked, and I took a few of them to add later on to the ones that I'm going to ask you. And Julie, with your sounding board and Love in the Time of Cholera, I bet you get a whole bunch. So I just wanted to ask you both, like, from things like that, questions coming in, what are some notable things that you've seen, if anything, about people's views of dating and relationships during this past year and a half? Julie, you would like to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, honestly, I think it's come in waves. It's been a long year and a half for sure. And I think people started off super excited about this, like, you know, new virtual way of dating. And then when shutdowns continued and continued, people lost a lot of hope. And now I think it's on the upswing again because there's a light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine. And I think people's experience has greatly varied too. Like, I think a lot of it depends on their personal situation. Like, some people have said that, like, being single right now is really freaking hard. And it's kind of like that underrepresented demographic that no one's talking about during the pandemic. And then other people are living their best life kind of like with enough support and, you know, have been continuously dating during this time and just taking those safety precautions, doing video dating to start, doing socially distanced park dates, now that things are opening up again, meeting outdoors at restaurants. So it's changed the way we date. We don't have the same like nonverbal cues of physical touch that once were present. So I think people have adapted, but I think it really depends again on people's safety levels and what they're looking for if they've been dating during this time or not.
You know, I often think about the things that online dating has given us over the last few decades. And it's very fortunate, I think, for a lot of people that online dating was a thing that existed in the forms that it did during the pandemic, because it's dating during that period of time, in the absence of online dating, you could imagine how tricky and how frankly dangerous that could have been. But the version of online dating that people have been doing is a very like intentional form of dating. A lot of people describe it as work, right? You have to sit down at your computer and whether it's go through messages or do your daily swiping or do your video chats. And it is not quite the same as the serendipitous, you happen to run into this person two times over the last 10 days and now you struck up a conversation. Like there is a serendipitous way that would have been very prominent prior to the pandemic. And I'm curious to see if people are going to remember how to do that once we get back out there.
Yeah, that ties in great, Paul, with the next question I have, focusing on online dating, because it did seem like before the pandemic, I got the general sense people were like, oh, Tinder, it's just swiping and it's you get a text maybe that says, hey, and that's it. And there's no the interaction is just pretty fast and furious or non-existent. And these are just a couple of people telling me that with online dating during the pandemic, it does seem more intentional. People have to make more of an effort. They're maybe more willing to make more of an effort. And one of my friends said, it's kind of like courting in Jane Austen era, where it's slow moving. There's maybe more, if not letter writing, more detailed conversation before taking the plunge in whatever way, because there's that cautiousness and there is more of that distance that you have to take for health reasons. I was wondering if that seems applicable to either of you, a little more intentional, especially with the dating, whether it's online or face-to-face.
Absolutely. Like, I think that is a word that we keep hearing. And I was actually going to mention that from what Paul just said. Intentional definitely stands out to me as what has really changed during this pandemic. And app usage has been super interesting because a lot of, you know, like the Bay Area apps have been around for a long time. So this has been something that's been prominent in a lot of our dating lives before the pandemic. But what we've noticed with our communities, it's all around the country. We even have people in different countries that are weighing in, and a lot of people of different demographics. We have people that range from, you know, Gen Z to Gen X. And I think a lot of people are trying online dating for the first time, which, I mean, because they were forced to, right? Like, there's no other outlet. And I think the experiences have greatly like varied depending on people. I've heard these like ultra romantic things, like kind of back to what you were just saying, Vanessa, about like the Jane Austen side. It's like, I've heard of people like do like sending like virtual flowers, like through, or like, you know, serenading over Zoom. Like, there's been some really nice stuff that have come out of this, or even doing a picnic in the park. Like, that's very romantic. But then I think the same frustrations with dating apps. I think initially at the start, we were hoping that kind of people would reset a bit and there wouldn't be as much of the ghosting, there wouldn't be as much of the flaking, breadcrumbing, all the stuff that's been like traditional challenges with dating apps. But that stuff has persisted. And I think ultimately it comes down to the individual. Like, I look at dating apps as a vehicle. They're a new way to meet new people that you wouldn't have come in contact with before. And I think a lot of people can get hung up with on the behavior of just humans on these dating apps. So I think that it's been a really interesting time that more and more people have been on dating apps than ever before, and a lot of new people have been circling in.
You know, I'm often fond of emphasizing for people this idea of, you know, using dating apps to reach out to different social circles and to treat it a little bit less like a market that you're trying to succeed in. And I do think that that is one of the challenges of online dating, is that when you limit people's exposure to what you're really like, you tend to reward things like physical attractiveness, obviously in the form of photographs or whatever you post. But also, I mean, you know, letter writing skills, right? I mean, you know, sort of in the 1800s, right? You would be rewarded for those kinds of skills. And I think we lose sight of the fact that when people naturally move in and out of different social networks, when people have more happenstance encounters, meeting friends of friends, doing various other activities, those are less market-like than the sort of markets that online dating creates. And I think what that means is that it's a space where you have fewer winners and losers. It doesn't necessarily mean there's less heartbreak, but it's a little bit more of an even playing field under those circumstances. And one thing that I wonder about is how many people during the pandemic, without that avenue at all, just felt totally crushed by the inability to compete in the online dating space. And you know, that's something that that I worry about a little bit, that without those sort of regular social interaction avenues that we didn't have, that there's a big group of people out there who got left out.
Well, that ties in perfectly. Paul, you're tying into my next questions perfectly. I was wondering, now that we're entering this summer, whether it's hot back, shot backs, or FOMO, I've been reading a lot of commentary on what the summer post-pandemic dating looks like. And there's references a lot to the Roaring Twenties, like with the previous pandemic we had back in 1918. That led indirectly or in some ways to the Roaring Twenties, people just letting loose. But then someone also said, could it be like post-World War II in a way, where people have just seen so much death and, you know, let's just get married and have a family? Or is it just human psychology? It's only been 14 months and we may not even remember this in a few years, and people just inevitably had their their personality and psychology, they'll just act the way they do. So what, I don't know if you have thoughts about what your, what, as we exit or the pandemic, will there be some kind of mad rush to interact in person or to like commit, you know, based on how you feel about this pandemic and its aftermath?
I think it's going to widely depend on people, stage of life, and where they are. I think that it's hard to make overall like sweeping views of the pandemic, because I think people are in different places, and that's even pre-pandemic. Like we've seen, you know, the people that want to just get out there and hook up and have casual relationships versus the people that have been longing for more serious, committed relationships. And I definitely think, though, it's going to have I do think there's going to be like a roaring 20s vibe of just like, I can already sense it with all the vaccines, like people just getting out there, whether that means that they're going like crazy and not having committed relationships or not. But I think there's definitely going to be the need to socialize in person and add that in. We actually talked to a dating app founder recently on our podcast from Coffee Meets Bagel and asked, like, do we think that, you know, the people that signed up for online dating are just going to leave now? And her take, and I do agree with this, is like, it might kind of pause and get diversified a bit when things start to reopen more. But people have seen the benefit that, like, you, in theory, can't go out every night of the week. I mean, you could in theory. I shouldn't say that you can't, but a lot of people have other responsibilities and they can't. It's hard to do that and to meet people all the time that way. So I think if people start diversifying, kind of like what Paul said, hopefully it will be healthier because it will give like one outlet. It won't be the only outlet. But I think like in general, people have become very intentional of what they're looking for. And I think the people that want a like committed relationship are still going to go down that path just because, not because like the vaccine is out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's a good bet that people are going to be interested in something more serendipitous, right? Putting themselves in situations where anything can happen, right? I mean, these were, you know, sort of movies that I associate with, you know, 10, even 20 years ago, but, you know, the, you know, One Night Out movie and all the things that can happen, you know, that are totally unpredictable. And I'd be willing to bet that those are the kinds of experiences that people have largely felt like they're missing. And it'll be interesting to see how the landscape shifts if people decide they want to put themselves in situations where those things can happen again.
Hi, this is Caleb Clark, executive producer of California Groundbreakers Podcasts. We're working on more episodes of This Changes Everything, literally as I speak, but putting them together takes a fair amount of time and money. If you like what you're hearing in this episode and you want to hear more of them, you can help us in two ways. First, consider being a Groundbreaker supporter right now by making a podcast creation donation. Click on the Support California Groundbreakers box on the right-hand side of our podcast page on SoundCloud. That's at soundcloud.com/California Groundbreakers, or click on the Donate tab of our homepage of our website at californiagroundbreakers.org. And if you have questions to ask about how California will change in post-pandemic times, or you want to suggest a topic to cover, or an expert to interview for an episode of This Changes Everything, email us at info@californiagroundbreakers.org and give us a few details so we can get in touch. Thanks for lending us your ears and giving us your support as well.
We're doing an episode right after yours, looking at youth and young adults, just how the pandemic has changed so many things for Gen Zers and young millennials. And actually, this ties into a question I have for you, Paul, that you got on an ask. Again, I mentioned up top, you did a Reddit Ask Me Anything. I think it was 3 months ago. It definitely was spring. And I thought this was an interesting question you got, because I feel like I hear this a lot and I read this a lot about, what's your opinion on love that doesn't feel ultra passionate? So this person was 31 and in a one-year relationship, a COVID-19 relationship, where he felt that she wasn't the one. It feels more mature compared to one that he had at 20 years old, love at first sight and butterflies. But I find it difficult to judge. So what do you do when you don't consider yourself massively in love? especially after 1 year and you have doubts? Should you continue, and how passionate should it feel? So I was wondering, you know, this, I read, and I'm a Gen Xer, but this view of like, what's the purpose, or what's the role of passion and butterflies and the stomach and so forth? This maybe isn't just a pandemic specific question, but maybe this view of relationships going forward, what does passion have to do with it anymore? Is it more or less, or again, is that just a sweeping generalization? But it just seems like a question. When I saw that one, I thought, I keep seeing a lot of people asking questions like that just in my personal life. So I wasn't sure if it was a trend.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a tricky question. And with all of any questions that end up getting sort of bound to a specific narrative, I mean, I think that, you know, we all are sort of aware of this when it's our own lives, but it's hard to appreciate when it's about other people's lives, is that there's, you know, a deep narrative that emerges in the context of any one relationship, right? How did you get to this point? And where was the passion, and where did it go? Because it usually does fade, at least to some extent for most people. That is the average thing that you tend to see. And, you know, are there things you can do to get it back? Probably there are ways of changing activities and doing more novel and exciting things together that have been shown that can increase passion to some extent. But the broader question of like, how do I know whether this is the relationship for me or not, is one of the most deeply personal questions that we don't have good, clear answers for. It is nearly impossible to take everything about your relationship right now and do much to predict about whether it's going to get better or get worse from here, right? Right? It's like the best we have is the moment of where you are right now. So these things end up being extremely challenging because the predictability of relationships is so tricky.
And unpredictable.
You know what's really fascinating, though, is that a lot of people that have had COVID relationships, their relationship has been set up differently, depending on when they met during COVID, of course. But the people that have met when we were really homebound, a lot of them are like doing their first trips together, their first like meeting of friends and like family, and like stuff that they might have done earlier on because of COVID, right? So I think it's, I mean, I don't think we have like the data at this point to see how these turn out because it's just too early. But it's going to be really interesting to see if like there's an opposite passion spike because they're now like doing more like activities and doing more stuff out in the world.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a case to be made that the elongated trajectory that some of these relationships would have had will lead those initial experience. It will just feel like a longer initial phase for those relationships, and that's sort of interesting to speculate about and consider.
Yeah, we've also heard about turbo relationships. I'm not sure if this is a term that has basically been like the relationship on turbo speed. So like people that, you know, are like moving ultra fast because, you know, like with the pandemic, people are doing less serial dating. They're committing faster, especially when there's, you know, sexual activity involved. It's like, you know, COVID is an STD. So it's like there's different things that have changed the way that people like project their relationship timelines. And we've seen personally some of that work out really great. It's like move fast track. Like one of the things that we said before the pandemic was that everyone was kind of in this game of relationship chicken. Like no one wanted to make the move. And it just kind of sat idle because both people weren't like moving it forward. And we've seen people move it forward. And I think some of those have been great. They've resulted in like long-term relationships, and then others have fizzled out fast, which, you know, might not be the worst thing. I think like startups, like there's a fail fast mentality. And like sometimes it's better to learn quickly that it's not a compatible match than to have something span out, seeing someone once a week for like 6 months to a year and then realizing that. Let's take a break from this riveting discussion for a quick message. Spring is in the air, and you know what adds an extra spring to my step? Our partners at Viahemp. Need to chill out after a long day? There's a Avaya gummy for that. Dealing with anxiety or stress? There's a gummy for that too. Want to set the mood in the bedroom? There's a gummy for that called High Love. Avaya also carries a wide array of other gummies with and without THC, ranging from 0 to 100 milligrams. I've been struggling to stay focused lately, so I was excited to try out their Flow State gummies. These felt like a good bet to me too, because they were non-psychoactive and THC-free. But they definitely delivered, boosting my daily energy and focus. So whether you're a 2 milligram or a 50 milligram user, you can shop through their website for any strength and effects. So head to Avaya Hemp and use the code DATEABLE to receive 15% off and one free sample of their award-winning gummies, 21 plus. That's VIIAHemp.com and use the code DATEABLE at checkout. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Take your passion and pleasure to a whole new level with High Love from Avaya Hemp.
Confession, I have a secret about how I've been able to update my wardrobe with only high quality but affordable pieces these last few years. And now I have to let the secret out because they're sponsoring this episode. It's called Quince. Yeah, if you know, you know. Quince has premium European linen dresses, gorgeous washable silk tops, luxurious cashmere, and the best part, they're priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. So no more middleman, and that's why it costs less to you. I know Julie got herself some nice cashmere pieces, and at only $50 a sweater, come on. And I recently ventured into home goods. I got myself some premium cotton percale sheets, ultra cooling, and just feels like a five-star hotel every night. And it's so perfect for the upcoming hot months. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/dateable for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/dateable to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/dateable. This episode is made possible by one of our favorite shows, Bachelor in Paradise. Listen up, Monday on ABC, love is a beach and someone will get burned. Bachelor in Paradise is finally back with your favorite bachelors and bachelorettes looking for love in all the right and wrong places. It's going to be SPF'd up starting Monday on ABC. These guys and gals have waited a long time to get back to the beach and they're just bursting, thirsting, and pounding against the waves. And just to make it a bit hot, a few celebrities are packing their bags to guest host David Spade, Lil Jon, Lance Bass, and more will dip their toes in the Paradise waters this season. Can Queen Victoria find her king? Will Connor the cat prove that he can kiss? Will anyone even talk to Carl? It's Paradise like you've never seen. And who knows, someone or someone's might get married. Think you've seen this before? Beach, please. Bachelor in Paradise premieres Monday at 8, 7 Central on ABC. Now back to this episode.
And this is just something that I have noted in terms of looking at people's Instagram feeds for the past 14 months. Every so often, or actually more than I thought I would see, are photos of people who just got married in their backyard or in a park, and they're all masked with their, you know, 2 or 4 or 10 people attending. And I remember before the pandemic, there was just so much focus on weddings and all the reality shows, the Bridezilla shows, and just wedding was such a big deal. And I just thought that's interesting to me. My friends who just said, I want to get married. I want to get married. I don't need the wedding. And I was wondering if that makes a marriage stronger because it wasn't about the wedding. But I just thought that's very notable to me to see that, you know, it's maybe the pandemic made them think differently about what matters in a relationship. And this celebration of love with all your hundreds of friends and a big cake may not be as big a deal as you thought. So that was just my take. I wasn't sure if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, the nature of marriage has changed a lot even over the last few decades, right? It wasn't that long ago where marriage was a thing you did as just one of many steps on the way to becoming an adult. And now it's one of these, you know, markers of achievement that you, you know, that you acquire upon reaching adulthood. You need to be an adult in order to be married, and everybody comes together to celebrate your arrival at adulthood. And it's So I agree there is a sense of if people are making the marriages really just about the relationship and not about this sort of like broader acceptance of being an adult, that might lead to better decisions. There's a flip side to that, which is that a really important predictor of whether relationships do well or poorly is whether you have support from your broader social network. So are your friends and family generally supportive of this relationship? And it'll be interesting to see what happens if people have gone through with these relationships, haven't gone through the phases of meeting the friends and meeting the parents and sort of, you know, negotiating how those relationships are going to happen until you've already sealed the marriage. What exactly is that going to do? Will those marriages be as integrated into people's social networks as they would have been in the past, I think is an interesting question.
I mean, I've seen and heard of couples that met during COVID now getting married. So their entire relationship has been in this like year to 14 month mark. And, you know, on some side, like there is studies, the older you get, a lot of times relationships just move faster because you know what you want and you're like wasting less time and just kind of moving on with life. But I think COVID has given people a lot of time together too. Like it's made us all slow down and really focus on more of the simple things in life. And I think I agree with you, Vanessa, in the sense that like there's something really nice about the fact that people are looking at marriage as like not the big party, but more of just unifying their lives together. That being said, like, I think it's a personal choice. And I don't know if it's like an indicator that one is stronger than the other. Like, I definitely have heard of people that are waiting because they see the value, kind of like what Paul was saying, of like celebrating with friends and family and having that big celebration and, you know, starting that milestone next chapter. And other people don't view it as much as that. So I think it's just a personal decision, but I do think it has changed weddings and the expectations of weddings for sure.
And just a couple more questions for you both. On that note, again, of being in a relationship, the previous podcast episode we did was on parenting during the pandemic and just work-life balance, how that will be addressed and maybe even resolved as we go out of the pandemic. But I was talking to two working mothers, and I think like many of you, you also know working parents and just the frustrations just, you know, multiplied during the pandemic. And it did make me think about, you know, we're talking about childcare and work, but we didn't talk about relationships in that episode, but it did make me think, how are these relationships coping? How can they handle them? How can they keep, you know, sanity and closeness? And I know we talked about this earlier, but I was wondering specifically what you're seeing and what you're thinking about relationships that have been taking so many stressors the past year and a half. Advice or just thoughts on how to keep it going and keep your sanity.
I mean, I think the pandemic has definitely like shined a light on what is happening in relationships. Like I've heard of couples that have really thrived and brought their relationship to the next level because like, you know, they're now spending all this time together. There's not as many distractions. But then I've also heard of the couples that like a lot of the issues are coming to the surface. And I totally agree that when children are in the mix and homeschooling and other stressors, like, I mean, there's been a lot. I think there's two camps of people. Like there's the camp people that have had it's been difficult in the pandemic because it's changed up their life, but they haven't had as many stressors necessarily as people that have lost their jobs or had someone ill from the pandemic or have been homeschooled. So I think like those, there is a difference in how people are reacting to the pandemic based on individual circumstance. So I think it has brought, like in the times of stress, has brought things to the surface that people maybe weren't communicating beforehand. And I mean, like you've heard in China, there was a lot of divorces. I haven't heard as many stats, I don't know, Paul, if you have, in the U.S. that happening as much, but there was like a wild like range of divorce that happened in China because of the pandemic from this. And I think, though, I've definitely heard stories of people that have split during this time, too, because it's like things that have come to the surface that were issues before, but have just resonated so much further.
Yeah, it's, you know, these are good questions. And you know, the speed of our discipline works such that we probably won't have good answers about this for a little while. For whatever reason, the kind of close relationships work we do, we don't work on the same time scale as the epidemiologists. So it'll take us a little while before we're really able to unpack sort of what happened to couples during the pandemic. What did stressors do on average? I mean, it's a given that stress is not good for relationships in general, but the question is which couples experienced sort of lockdown extended time together as a stressor and which ones didn't. And, you know, what seems clear is that what sort of these extended periods at home would have done is increased closeness, but in a literal way, right? Closeness in the form of we are spending more time together, our decisions are more interdependent because now it's all meals together. Maybe before it was just one or even zero per day, depending on the kind of work you did. But if you were able to do your job pretty well from home, and really what happened to you was that you didn't have to do difficult commutes anymore, and now you get to do multiple meals a day with your partner, that could be a great thing for your relationship. Other people, like you were saying, Julie, it could very well expose all sorts of rifts that people were just able to ignore before because the literal closeness wasn't there that sort of allowed them to get by without these things. So, closeness is a tricky thing. If you end up with more of it, you may discover all sorts of new opportunities in that relationship, or you may discover there were things that weren't working so great.
All right, last question for you both. And this is an advice one, honestly, because it feels, again, like there's a lot of people who want to go out just to enjoy the summer and just to get out now that June 15th is that magic date when we can all unmask here in California. But there's still, it feels, and I know I feel this way too, it's just that it has been a year and a half and being socially awkward and maybe not remembering what things were like or how they will be like now. Do you have any advice about, you know, leaving the house and going out to be social, whether you're looking or not, and getting over maybe that uncertainty or facing the uncertainty about dating in a post-pandemic era?
Yeah, I think this is very real. Like, I think we all thought like, oh, as soon as we're let out, it's going to be super easy. We're going to do this. But there's been so many things of like, I've lost all my social skills during this time. And I think, again, it's case by case. Like, I think the people actually in our own community, Love in the Time of Corona and the Sounding Board, they've actually been like flexing their social muscles virtually during this time. And I'm sure there's other ways that people have been doing this. Clubhouse has like exploded during this time and other apps like that too. Recreate some of this virtually. That being said, that's not the same as in person. And I think sometimes it's going to be a personal decision of how do you ease back in? Like we've heard people even say like, I'm used to wearing sweatpants, like wearing real clothes is overwhelming. So I think it's like, maybe you're not going out in a, like a super like fancy dress day one. Like it's like, how do you take those baby steps? And again, with dating too, it's like, maybe you're not overloading your calendar. Maybe you're still doing video. Like we've heard from people that overall video has been a great way to screen dates. People don't want to be on video calls forever anymore, but it's still a good way to like get excited about the date, feel more comfortable about who you're meeting. So maybe that stays. And I think there's a lot of social proof that that will stay. So maybe it's just easing back in and taking the little steps that you need. And I think just saying to people on dates, like, hey, I like being honest, like I feel socially rusty. Like I am a little uncomfortable right now, but I'm super excited to be here with you. It's like all how you can be vulnerable and spin it.
I think that's right. I think it's going to be a lot of the whole body, nonverbal stuff that's going to feel especially odd in the beginning, right? When you're, you know, the idea of standing and talking to somebody face to face, like looking at them in the eyes, like their actual eyes that are just a few feet away from you, like, boy, does that sound unusual and like something that we haven't done on a regular basis. And so, yeah, people need to give themselves a break to the extent that feels awkward and unusual, maybe try doing some social things where you don't have to look directly at each other, whether that's, you know, you're sort of facing in the same direction, talking. I mean, you know, I associate with like the typical way that men interact with each other is sort of, we're looking kind of in the same direction, but definitely not at each other. And that makes handling the nonverbals a little easier.
I think picturing that on a date, kind of like side-eyeing someone.
Yeah. I think the one thing that actually is going to come out from this is people need to be more verbally expressive. Like in the past, you would, you know, like indicators of interest on a date would be like touching someone's leg or like lightly touching their arm. And that I don't think is going to like jive well in this post-pandemic world. I think it's going to be more like, hey, can I kiss you? Like actually saying it, not just going in for it. Because that could be very jarring when, you know, we haven't been doing that for quite some time.
Please submit a request in writing.
Yeah. Flowery Jane Austen style, please. Yeah. All right. Well, I bought a dress. Oh my God. Now I'm like, after hearing this, I'm not sure. I did buy a dress. I bought a lipstick. I bought some sandals because I do want to enjoy the summer. It's my favorite season. Mm-hmm. Whether we'll meet anyone or not, who knows? But it's just very fun to get out again. And this has been very, very useful information for me, at least. I'm hopefully for others. So I want to say thank you. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Paul, for coming on and talking to us about this, you know, what this summer will look like, whether it's hot vax or not. It's going to be interesting to see. And Paul, I look forward to seeing that study whenever it comes out.
Thank you for having us. This was so fun.
Yes, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to California Groundbreakers, This Changes Everything, Episode 9, which was recorded on May 27th, 2021. Thanks to Paul Eastwick and Julie Krafchick for taking the time to talk with us. Special thanks again goes to our donors, John and Francis Taz, for funding the production of this episode. Also, thanks to Nate Graham and Caleb Clark for recording and producing this podcast. And of course, thanks to you for listening. If you find our podcasts worth listening to in these difficult times, please make a donation and support our efforts to produce informative and inspiring conversations about what Californians should expect in the post-pandemic future. You can do that, as well as keep tabs on upcoming podcast episodes, events, and other information about us by going to our website, californiagroundbreakers.org.
The Dateable Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Want to continue the conversation? First, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with the handle @DateablePodcast. Tag us in any post with the hashtag #StayDateable, and trust us, we look at all of those posts. Then head over to our website, datablepodcast.com. There you'll find all the episodes, as well as articles, videos, and our coaching service with vetted industry experts. You can also find our premium Why series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We're also downloadable for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. Your feedback is valuable to us, so don't forget to leave us a review. And most importantly, remember to stay dateable.